Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Jen Court. Jen is a diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice consultant working with schools and organizations in multiple countries. As an educator and clinical social worker, Jen has served as an assistant head of lower school, head of middle school, and senior administrator, as well as a counselor in low, middle, and upper schools in private practice. As the founder of Jen Court Consulting, Jen works with groups to create sustainable and systematic change and to live out their missions regarding diversity and inclusion. Her goal is to create spaces where students and all community members can be seen and heard while learning to be visible and use their voices in productive ways. Jen has presented at national conferences, hosts a Diversity Institute, is a frequent contributor to publications, and her work has been quoted in the Washington Post and New York Times. Jen is also the host of an internationally syndicated podcast called The Third Space with Jen Court. Welcome to the podcast, Jen.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to be on this side of the mic.
Well, thanks for joining me today. And as I start out with everybody, we talked a little bit in the pre-chat. You said that you have several times when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out. So tell me a little bit about some of these stories and what you learned from them.
Yeah, I think the challenge is to narrow it down because I have so many. So one that I've actually talked about a little bit in a couple of workshops recently, because it was really pivotal for me, was when I was a principal of a middle school. And I had a student who I had been the assistant principal when he was in elementary school. And we had student interns from Gallaudet, the University for the Deaf. And they taught us a hand motion that's like a Y with your thumb and your finger, and it's back and forth. And it's just to kind of say, like, I see you, I'm here, we're in a moment together. And so when he came to middle school, he still did that with me. And I entered the hallway, the eighth grade hallway, and I could see him at the other end of the hallway. I could tell something had happened by his face. He just looked very tense, but he did the hand motion and they all went to class. And I looked in his class, he looked really engaged. And then I saw him at lunch and I asked him how he was, and he said, fine. And I said, good, I have a meeting to go to. So the next day, before school opened, and I don't know if anyone else has had this experience where you walk in the building and you can just feel the energy of somebody, and I could feel his mom and his energy. And she was furious with me. And they came in my office and she said, look, my son had a racist incident happen to him yesterday. You saw it. You did nothing. You asked him if he was okay at lunch. He said, yeah. And you were like, good, I have a meeting to go to. And she was wildly, deeply, profoundly, and understandably upset. And everything she said was true. Every bit of that is what happened. And of course, I could have spent time saying, well, I didn't really see anything, I didn't really hear anything, but I just really wanted to honor that this was true. What she said was true, and I had to learn from it. And that was my task at the moment, was what am I going to learn from this, and how am I going to try to make it okay for this young man and his mom? And we talked for a while, and we came up with a bunch of things. And one of the things that he and I talked about was, I said, I did see you, and I could tell something happened, but I didn't know what it was, and I missed something. And so I came up with a strategy that it's one of my top five strategies that I tell teachers all the time, or I suggest to teachers all the time, to tell your students, you know, when you think I heard or saw something and you didn't hear or see me respond, I need you to, and then you fill in the rest of the sentence with what you need them to do. And I would urge teachers, though, if you want them to talk to you, please don't limit it to that, because that's often hard. So in my case, at that time I said to my students, like, if you think I heard or saw something, you didn't see me respond, I'm hoping you'll tell me, but if not, here are 10 other people you can tell, and please ask them to tell me, because sometimes we see and hear things and we don't want to respond, or we don't feel we're able to. And a lot of times we don't understand the significance that it happened in that moment. And so I want students to be in partnership with me in those moments, and hopefully with the adults in their lives. And it was an excruciating situation for him and for his mom. And even talking about it now, I can feel like my heart going a little faster, because I was in a situation where a very painful moment happened and I did nothing about it at the time. So it stuck with me. It's probably 8 or 9 years ago, and I still can go right back to that moment. And I pray that he can't go back to that moment as easily as I can. I'm hoping he was able to move through that and feel supported in other ways.
Yeah, I see. You know, that's something I think a lot of people have experienced sometime in their career, because we're not always seeing what's happening with the student in the moment, right? And just that I have to go to a meeting, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we're so rushed and we haven't picked up on what the child needs, and you know, going back and just wishing we'd you know, done something different in that short amount of time. Right. But it's such an eye opener for you, and having that mom just open your eyes to exactly, you know, how she'd seen it. And then you were able to kind of retrace your steps and realize, you know, this is what it did to that child. But it's great that you're able to then now give, you know, people, when you speak at conferences, a little bit of information about kind of how to approach that in a different way.
Yeah.
Did you have any other trench stories that you wanted to share?
I have dozens. Dozens from this week. So I was teaching a class recently, and it was a diversity class, and I used the wrong label. We were talking about gender, and I said gender instead of sex for assigned sex instead of gender, and which, you know, I know not to do that, but I did it anyway. And I was so glad that I told my students ahead of time, like, please let me know if I show that I'm not getting where you're coming from. This is collaborative. This is a partnership. And thank goodness, one of the students did say, I think you meant sex and not gender. And so I, you know, it threw me off for a moment. It always throws me off for a moment when they point out that I've done something wrong. But the important part there was to, you know, I'm glad that I created that space for us to be able to share that. And then I apologized. And then later on, because I'm the kind of person that always feels so badly, then I found some, you know, resources and emailed the students that I want you to know, not only did you correct me in a way that I needed to be corrected, also clearly that's a space that I need to be doing some more work around my bias, which is, you know, I'm working on my bias every day, all day, all the time. And I just shift focus. So it was, that was just the other day. And then on the same day, I was working with my students were in a whole different session in a different school, kids that I work with regularly. And a student had I had a Jamboard open, and I was asking them to share. Jamboard is an app where you can like all write on the same thing so you can see. And I was asking them to share what their thoughts were about the conversation that we were having around racism. And there were a couple of students in the class who were not really interested in the conversation, I'll say it in that way. And they created a new page of the Jamboard and were saying all kinds of things that should not be said. I didn't even know there was another page created. And so one of the things that was, you know, thank goodness, again, a student brought it forward to me and we were able to talk about it, but I had not given the right directions. I had not framed the conversation in the way that we should. And so it was very much like, okay, now the space, yes, they shouldn't have been doing what they were doing, but the space was created for that to happen by me, by my not giving what I needed to give, and not being as clear as I needed to be. And so that was, you know, they have a responsibility in it, but the fact that there was space for it to happen was 100% my responsibility. Those were just on the same day. I mean, you could call me any day and I can tell you the way moments in the trenches.
Yeah, no. And I think that's so great to be able to reflect back on after the fact, because no matter how long we've been in education, there's things that we do. We, you know, we mess up, and being able to own that, right? And go back to our students when you were using the terms gender versus sex, and then going back and actually finding resources for your students and being real about it, right? Being vulnerable. It's a growth experience for us, but it also shows students that, you know, we're willing to take their comments about, you know, how we might have messed up. And, you know, it's so great when, and it's mostly, I think, high schoolers I've seen that are, you know, they're more willing to kind of share with the teacher if we've maybe spelled something. Mine was, I could have spelled something wrong on the board or left out a word, right, when I was writing things on the board.
Yeah. But
having kids, you know, just point that out, right? Because then you see it's been on the board for the whole day and nobody pointed that out, right?
So. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think about mistake making in that I hope I'm learning from my mistakes every day. I know that I make mistakes every day, and I'm hoping that I create partnerships where folks will let me know. And in that case about gender and sex, you know, it was wonderful to be able to say to the kids, look, this is how ingrained, this is a space I'm in all the time. I live in this space of diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice, and I spend a lot of time around gender and gender identity. And yet look how the habits are so ingrained. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, being able to put that forward for them, I mean, I don't know, it's either that or else I'm going to be in a fetal position because of every time I make a mistake.
Well, let's shift a little bit over and talk about your podcast journey and, you know, talk a little bit about what you, how you came up with the name Third Space. And we talked a little bit in the pre-chat about how you kind of accidentally stumbled into hosting a podcast and what you have had kind of as discussions on the podcast in recent episodes.
Yeah. So it's, I've wanted to have a podcast for a long time. And I had the idea for Third Space for a few years before it actually came into fruition. And the name comes from, there's a term, I believe in architecture, that there's a creation of third spaces, and they are supposed to be like, you know, your local coffee shop or something like that. It's a place where you just go and be. Yes, you're getting coffee, but you're just hanging out there too. And it's outside of home or work. So I wanted the podcast to feel like you're overhearing a conversation in a coffee shop. And that was my goal. So it's not edited. It's very raw and real. And you hear, I mean, talk about being in the trenches. You hear me in the trenches on almost every episode. And the way it came about was I was speaking at an online conference called MADPD, Make a Difference Professional Development. And I'd never done an online conference. This was before COVID. So online conferences were just, you know, brand new. And I had never done a Flipgrid. There were all kinds of technology things that I had to learn to do it. And so I go to my session and I'm really excited. I've learned the technology. I've got it all up there. All these people have been part of MADPD for a while. They all know each other. I was like, this is awesome. They've invited me into the space. And I started giving my session and no one showed up. And I'm not saying that exaggerated. I'm saying like legit, no one showed up. I was talking to myself. And so that night there was an after party, which again, before COVID, I was like, really, we're gonna have an after party virtually, but it was really cool. So all these people were talking about their sessions and how many viewers they had and how great the participation was. And I'm just listening and I'm in awe and I'm celebrating them and I'm learning. And then somebody says, hey, Jen Court, you're new to all this. Why don't you share about your session? And I just kind of said, well, I've learned a lot about the technology, but no one came. And Stephen Hurley, who is the producer for Third Space, among many other podcasts, he's part Voice Ed CA, the it's VOIC and then capital ED.ca, Voice Ed Canada, which is formed by educators. And Stephen was in that room and he said, hey, I'd love to have you on my show. And so he, you know, I was a guest and then, you know, we talked about, should I have my own show? And I'm like, I'm not interesting enough to have my own show. I would bore myself. And my show is all about diversity. You can't have the white cisgender being identified as female at birth and living as a female heterosexual, like that person doing a diversity podcast doesn't make any sense. But I had this idea to have different practitioners, students, teachers, parents, administrators, consultants, come in and just share their expertise for that hour. And I've been really fortunate that my friends and mentors and colleagues and people who let me safe cyber stalk them because I'm like, oh, I love your work, come into Third Space and share their expertise. And we've just started our third season and I could not be more proud of it and more grateful because for me, it's my professional development in front of everybody. Like I'm Debbie Irving, who wrote Waking Up White, who is a guest. She said, you know, I'm learning in public. And that's what Third Space feels like to me.
Yeah, that's so just inspiring how that kind of happened, right? And just going to that happy hour in, you know, in a time where online conferences and online happy hours weren't a thing. And then just stumbling into your now producer kind of in this online happy hour, right? And just realizing that, you know, you might not quote unquote be the expert on diversity at the time, but bringing in people and, you know, having those conversations to now be in your third season. So
yeah,
and that's, you know, I think how a lot of us podcasters develop, you know, we bring in people, I would agree. I think that's my PD this year is talking to the guests and learning from the guests and, you know, some of these online conferences as well, but just kind of debriefing, like what you guys, for example, had at AMLE. And
yeah,
let's kind of jump to that because we both attended and presented at AMLE that was in October. Mm-hmm. And but you're also, you present every year at AMLE and you write a lot. So talk a little bit about kind of how long you've been involved with AMLE and what sort of articles that you write for them and what kind of sessions you had at this year's conference.
Yeah, so for those who don't know what AMLE is, it's the Association of Middle Level Educators. And I have been a member off and on since its first iteration, so many, many years ago. And then when I was a middle school principal, of course, for me, it was an of course to be a member. And then since I've started consulting for the last few years, I have had the privilege of being accepted, my proposals being accepted to offer sessions. And that's always a thrill. I mean, there's just something really different when you're with a whole bunch of middle school educators. I mean, we are a weird, fabulously weird group of people. And I love that when we're there, we just get to be that. And everyone's like, oh, I get that. And then I'm also really fortunate that AMLE finds some resonance between what I write about and what they want folks to be reading about. So I've done several articles for them, including a series on supporting students and then also supporting teachers and the parent-teacher relationship in times of COVID and whether or not, you know, having cameras on is supporting equity. And then I have a piece that I just sent off to them the other day on supporting your LGBTQIA++ students. What do the letters mean and how do I support them? So yeah, it's been a real privilege. And then from that, you know, the AMLE conference the in-person is amazing and the virtual was amazing. And one of the things that happened my first year of the conference was they had a little program that I don't even know if they still do it, but you could get a mentor if you were new to the conference. And my mentor was Paul Meck. I asked for one. I'm always wanting to learn and I know what I don't know. And my mentor was Paul Meck. Who's just a phenomenal educator and deeply involved in middle school work. And he's on the board of the PAMLE, the Pennsylvania Association of Middle Level Educators, and asked me to join them. And so I'm really, you know, it's just fun. And we get to talk about middle school stuff all the time. And we actually have our conference coming up. We're opening up our conference to anyone in the world who wants to attend. We've got some great sessions already with people who are going to present. And it's February 27th to 28th. And it's just at PAMLE.org. You can register. It's really inexpensive. I mean, we are making it so inexpensive that, I mean, you know, for it's like $60 for 3 days of 2.5 days of really rich content. So it's been a lot of fun. And I missed being in person this year because it's a conference that I look forward to. I feel like it's just, you know, it's my tribe.
Yeah. And I think once you find that group of people, right, and like-minded professionals that are in an organization, then you keep going back. I mean, there's several local conferences I keep going back to and speaking at every year. And this is the first time that I'd spoken at AMLE because it was kind of, it was a little bit more open, two more sessions with the online format. And, you know, hopefully in a year I'll be able to go in person there, but you know, I think just taking, you know, that into the local conference as well. And as you said, like, I think it's really a great opportunity that, you know, people can attend now with virtual conferences, conferences in any state. And, you know, I reached out to a friend about presenting at a Colorado conference that we're also having in February for the World Language Teachers Association, somebody that lives in another state. So, you know, it's a good opportunity to bring people in that you wouldn't, you know, and other times you would have to have them fly in, right?
So yeah. Well, my AMLE sessions, I don't know if they were there in person for the first one, but I had emails from a few people from several countries saying that they had listened to the recording of them. And I think that's just fabulous. It's one, I mean, I just always try to find the good in everything. And one of the good things about all of this is that we've been able to connect in a different way and share resources in a different way. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And you spoke a little bit about Rosalind Wiseman, who had a keynote at AMLE. And tell me how you're connected with her and some of her work. So I wasn't familiar with her before you'd spoken about her.
Yeah, Rosalind is, we've known each other. We met, I don't know, I'm going to say like over 20 years ago. Neither of us were moms and our oldest kids are in college now. And she and I, you know, I've just been following her work. Her work is amazing. She's the co-founder of Cultures of Dignity, and they really produce great content around how we help kids to live within dignity and have dignity in their relationships and advisory work. And Rosalind was a guest a couple of times on Third Space, including the first opening the series conversation with her intern, Trey Garnett. And when we were at AMLE, she was a keynote speaker. And so I just texted her and said, you know, do you want to, let's just catch up. And so we, you know, got to hang out and catch up and share where we both were. And we were looking for ways that we could kind of work together and did a little bit of work around supporting conversations around the election together. But she is a phenomenal writer and speaker, and I admire her a lot, and she's just really authentic and really willing to learn in public. I always appreciate people who make it look so easy. And I'm fortunate that, you know, we were friends, and it's been a lot of fun to watch her growth. Because I remember from before she wrote Queen Bees and Wannabes, and then all the work she's done since, it's I'm very happy for her, and I'm happy that the world gets to hear her.
Yeah, and seeing that growth over that many years, right? And keeping in touch and you know, hearing her speak, it's you know, I'm sure it makes you feel proud. I wanted to highlight a little bit about just some of your work in helping students who you know, are suffering inequities. You know, because we have so many systems in schools that keep inequity in place. And, you know, we've started to think about it more this year, and this has been on our radar for years. But, you know, talk a little bit about how educators can just make things more equitable for students, no matter what the demographics of their district is. And the voices of the unheard, you've also told me you wanted to highlight in. You know, what are some of those unheard students?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's your podcast is such a great vehicle for this conversation for so many reasons. And one of which is that I think one of the ways in which we can break down those systems is for adults to become much more comfortable learning from their mistakes and inviting students to tell us, because we're in this really unique time in history where kids have a lot more language around diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice than many adults. And we have many adults have more experience than many kids. And so we're at this point where we really, I think we need to say to our students, I didn't talk about this when I was your age. And so I'm learning and I'm going to learn with you and from you, and I'm going to make some mistakes. And let's talk about how we respond to mistakes in each other. I think that's really important and cannot be overstated, because they have, there's so many terms and understandings around this that many of us didn't have or hear about, that are just very ingrained for them. So my work is really focused on, first of all, working with the individuals in a school, so the teachers, parents, administrators, and students, and more. But then also looking at what are the systems you have in your school that are continuing to hold inequities in place. And so when I'm working at a school long term, and we're really diving deep into looking at their structures, we can frequently look back to what they had done, the work they had done. And most of it is from teacher to student. That's the genesis of the professional development. So that's great, but it's not going to help if we haven't also done our own work. I mean, I can't interrupt bias between my students if I'm not examining my own bias. I think that's a really impossible task to do in a sustainable way, and in a way that is authentic and rings true for our students. So then it's really looking at what all do we need to do? Do your policies reflect your commitment to equity, diversity, inclusion, and justice? Do your practices reflect your policies? Do your hiring goals match your diversity goals? All those pieces. So looking at the ways in which schools operate, down to even, you know, if you are contracting with vendors, do your vendors know what your position is, so that you are finding vendors who are in mission alignment or not, you know, so that it's really looking at, are we walking our walk and talking our talk? And that's the work that I'm really interested in. It's the stuff that I find really exciting. And it's really, as you said in the intro, I really think it's important that we're focused on sustainable and systemic change. And that only happens when we're willing to kind of sit back and look at each part of the school and the student experience, including talking to our alumni students and alumni parents and alumni faculty. You know, what was your experience like? So that we asking them what their experience was like, so that we're learning from that. And we're also honoring that their experiences happened and that needs to be heard. So that's how I spend a lot of my time. And I'm really privileged when schools say, you know, this is work we want to do, and we're willing to really work on it in an authentic way and in an impactful way, as opposed to, you know, sometimes what I think a lot of the professional development was for a long time was just kind of like, let's have a speaker and we'll talk about bias and then check, we've checked that off. And now it's like, no, we need to look at what we're doing that's systemic, and how are we contributing to inequities.
Yeah, and I think you had so many great points there, and especially that part about bringing in those alumni, students, parents, and staff. I love that. You know, I mean, you know, to have those people examine what the experience was like for them, and you know, and even maybe an alumni staff really kind of diving into maybe some of the mistakes that they made or what they've learned over the years since they worked at that particular institution. And like you're saying, it is something that needs to be sustainable and systemic change. And it can't just be done with a PD, right? We really need to look at, you know, our biases. And a lot of us, you know, Caucasian educators, we don't think we have biases, but then, you know, like you gave in that first story on the podcast, you know, a lot of the time we don't see it the way other students see it. Right. And we, you know, we don't see how maybe something we said that we don't see as biased or racist, how it can affect another student, right? We have not lived in their shoes. So I think, you know, just kind of examining, you know, just those, you know, articles that I've read and things where you can find out what are some of those hidden biases, right? Mm-hmm. Or assumptions that we make sometimes about people of color or people, you know, who are different than us.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it makes so much of a difference. I've had a few guests on that have discussed kind of what, you know, what are some examples of those biases? And, you know, could you maybe give an example? I know you work a lot with LGBTQIA students, and what is an example of a bias that maybe educators have, you know, surrounding these students that maybe comes out the wrong way?
Well, I think really commonly is presumption of pronouns, looking mm-hmm. at somebody and seeing how their body looks or their mm-hmm. or their name or something like that, and assuming that what their pronoun is. So mm-hmm. Instead of asking, teachers should never ask students what their pronouns are, because you don't want to inadvertently out them or give them a reason to have to lie to you. Mm-hmm. But the more that we're creating space for pronoun use, the more we're sending that message. And for, mm-hmm. for a lot of kids, you know, when we're thinking about members of the LGBTQIA+ community, it's an emerging understanding. And so the more I'm interested in teachers providing anchor points that students can have in that moment, as mm-hmm. well as to look back and say, oh, I did get messages of acceptance, even if I wasn't fully where I am right now, I can look back and have that as part of it. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. I had a student tell me recently that he identifies as male, and that he had a teacher say to him, you know, over break, are you gonna get together with a girl? Are you interested in a girl? And I was like, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. he said, I'm not interested in girls. And why would he assume that? And so those kinds of things, I think it's very much like, if I were to put it all down to one thing, it would be majority presumptive language, mm-hmm. Assuming that more kids are heterosexual, meaning attracted to the opposite sex, and not giving space for them to say if they choose to mm-hmm. or not. Also, you know, assuming that pronouns are, you know, that we can decide what somebody's pronouns are instead of creating space for them to decide. Mm-hmm. And then we do things too, like we still, you know, teachers still say mom and dad instead mm-hmm. of parents. And by parents, I mean the people who are taking care of the child. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of pieces to it. And you were talking about, you know, white folks and feeling like, you know, maybe we feel like we don't have bias. And I think it's, you know, one of the things I try to do is bring people along into the language, so that not making people feel like you're bad because you weren't there, but like, when you know more, you do more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of us were raised and educated that as educators, if we loved the kids, then we were being anti-bias. And mm-hmm. also that, you know, as white people, we're not supposed to talk about race because we're going to mess it up. Mm-hmm. And that if you said you had bias, you were saying that you were racist, and none of those are true. I mean, mm-hmm. we are going to mess it up, and yeah. that's okay. Mm-hmm. As long as we're not harming and we're creating space for that reparation when needed. And we loving the kids is important, really important, but that is not anti-bias work. Anti-bias work is when you acknowledge that you have bias, which does not mean you're racist, though they're not exclusive, mm-hmm. exclusionary of each other. But it means, you know, it means saying, yes, I have bias because I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. And what am I doing to work on it? And that's part of an everyday, all day exercise. It's why a one-time PD doesn't work. And it's really simplistic. And I've overused this example, but, you know, we wouldn't teach algebra in an assembly. So why would we teach this work in an assembly or a workshop? Mm-hmm. They first need to know 1 + 1 = 2, and then 2 + 2 = 4, and you build towards so that you're bringing people along. So it's a process. And I think the sooner mm-hmm. educators can say, I don't know. Cause even if you have the same identifiers as your students, except for age, of course, mm-hmm. You still don't know what it's like to be a teenager today.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, while you were talking, it kind of made me think about a student. I think it was back in 2014, the student must have graduated in 14. And this was a student who was going to transition after high school, but had not mm-hmm. Started, you know, wearing clothes, taking on the female, part of her identity, right? And was still just wearing, you know, still passing as male. And I just remember how a lot of the colleagues I worked with they wanted to use the male pronouns, right? And, mm-hmm. During our lunches and things, I would always have to just, you know, they were kind of get them on that. They were misgendering the student, even though the student yeah. hadn't, you know, wasn't kind of outwardly displaying that they identified as female. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very obvious. I didn't have the student in any classes, but she would often come in and just kind of had chats with me before or after school, maybe because of that safe space, right?
Yeah.
But and these colleagues were male colleagues that may, I don't know, maybe they just didn't have any experience. And I know kind of in the last 5 years, it's been more, we've had more students that are more out, you know, with transitioning and things. And I just, you know, I know that this is still kind of an issue in some schools where, you know, you do have some colleagues that are using the correct, you know, pronouns and some colleagues that aren't. And yeah. I did see it was one of those lightning sessions at AMLE. There was a educator who talked about non-binary students who themselves are non-binary. So that was an interesting session as well to just see, you know, how, you know, it's when they have that safe space, it helps them a lot as well.
Yeah. And I think it's also a matter of saying to students, you know, having some agreements with students around the language you're going to use, and when you misgender, when you call someone by the wrong pronoun, what are you going to do about that? And that's part of that partnership piece. But then you also have to do the work so you're not misgendering kids. So there's that. And, you know, and I think also, like you were talking about your student and beginning to dress differently. And so switching, alternating the gender expression. And so that also happens in reverse, where you have somebody who is changing their gender expression to be more neutral or of another gender, and people make a lot of assumptions about them too. So I think what it comes down to, honestly, is that who we are the labels we get to give ourselves, and no one else gets to give them to us. And then everyone else needs to listen and honor those labels. And so, and if that's hard for you, like I was talking with some teachers recently, and so if that's hard for you, that, so this is a great thing teachers can do. Like, oh, that would be hard for me to do. All right, well, then you need to assume that you have a lot of bias and around that. If it's hard for you, then you have a lot of bias, most likely. And you probably also get a lot of privilege around that. So you might be cisgender, or you might be heterosexual, or you might be your, you know, your gender expression is very much in alignment with your gender identity. So that tells you what your bias is. And then that means you have to do some work around bias and gender identity. So it's, we can figure this out, but we have to honor. And I'm so glad that you were there for that student. Because there are a lot of kids who don't have that. And it really has only started changing around 5 years ago when the American Pediatric Association and the American Psychological Association changed their criteria. And so we are seeing more and more kids. And you know, one thing we're going to have very soon in middle schools and high school is our members of the Alpha generation, the 10 and unders, and they have a very different relationship to gender than any generation before them. And we see that in a lot of ways. So I think it's just important, like if teachers could do one thing, and by teachers, I mean, everyone who works in a school, I would hope that they would start to incorporate language around what their own learning is, so that they are conveying, you know, that I don't know, and I'm not going to pretend that I do, but I'm here and I'm doing my work.
Yeah, that's so important. Tell me a little bit about your current school setting, because we talked about that in the pre-chat, and I thought that was very interesting. You're in a Montessori school, but it's actually at the high school level. And usually when we think of Montessori, we think of preschools, baby, kindergarten, and then here in the Denver area, I know of a Montessori K-8, but I've never heard of a Montessori high school.
Well, there's only a few in the country, and I'm very grateful to be the counselor for Oneness Family Montessori High School. And they started as an elementary school and a middle school and have been around for 30 years and decided to start a high school. And so this year is our first year that we have 4-year seniors. So it's really a baby school in terms of its age. And it's a lot of fun. I get to, you know, spend time with these great kids in a way that is different than how I spend a lot of my time. Because a lot of my time when I'm working with students is very much agenda driven. You know, we're here to talk about bias. We're here to talk about white supremacy culture or whatever it is. It's very agenda driven. And getting to be a high school counselor with these kids, it is agenda driven, but it's 100% their agenda. It's not mine. And so we just go from wherever they are in the moment. And I learn a lot from them. And I when you asked me about it, I got a big smile because it just makes me really happy to be able to spend time with them and to have watched them over the past few years to, you know, some of them applying to college. And I'm like, oh, I remember when you were in 10th grade. And that seems like just yesterday. So it's really fun.
And you talked about you're meeting with these kids. They're sort of in a hybrid model, and they're coming in every 2 weeks. and they're doing more outdoor-based education. So what are some of the activities that you do with them when they're in person, and also some of the interesting activities that you all do with the counseling groups when they are remote?
Yeah, so we, the teachers are amazing, and they've designed the program and curriculum as, like, they're making it up as they go along, and mm-hmm. it's always very student-centered and very much student-informed. So every 2 weeks, they are together for the day. And that is experiential. So they've gone to the pumpkin patch, they've gone on hikes, they've done, you know, so it's getting outside and being together and being physically separated, but very much not, I don't like the term social distancing, because yeah. I don't want them to social distance. I want them to physically distant, but to be very socially connected. That's mm-hmm. my goal. And so those days are really important. And then when we're in our space, our Zoom space together, I try to have times where sometimes I'm just in the room and kids will drop in and we'll talk about things as a group. We do some individual sessions as they want to. When we're physically together, I get to do things like just take a walk around campus with them and have a conversation where we're walking and talking or having a class meeting. But also I've tried to come up with some things that are just more creative to help mm-hmm. with team building, because team building online is really hard. I find it very difficult. I welcome listeners to share ideas with me, because I'm always looking for them. But a couple weeks ago, we did an online scavenger hunt and then telling stories. So you're finding something and then telling a story about it. And that's just a way for them to get to know each other. And right now I'm working on an online escape room. Mm-hmm. And then we do things. I thought this was really cool. We had project week this week where every student and teacher presents for an hour on something that they're really interested in. It could be about their mm-hmm. curriculum, their content. It could be about something else. We had students who present on activism and CGI work. And I did mine on diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. And then that's going to come into my weekly session. We're going to unpack that further so we can spend more time talking about it. But it's a lot of fun, and they're really neat kids. And I'm honored that they trust me in their space and mm-hmm. that the school continues to have me there.
Yeah, no, it's such a great opportunity for you to work with students in this setting, and, you know, to take that time when they are in person to do that experiential outdoor ed. And not all schools have that. And that's something I also saw in the AMLE conference. There were a couple of mm-hmm. speakers who talked about that outdoor ed. And my kids went to a expeditionary learning elementary school. And, you know, they would do these voyages, they called them, twice a year, you know, 3 to 5 day voyages, and also help a lot with, you know, people in the community and nursing homes and things like that. But
wow.
I don't think they're really able to do much of that this year, but, you know, it's great to hear how you guys are just kind of exploring nature and making those connections right when you are in person. So, you said as well that you're supervising some counselors online, and you guys are
yep.
Kind of discussing different ideas as you learn and go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't been, well, until I went back to oneness, I hadn't been a counselor in a while, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. though I've always been involved in the counseling field. And thankfully so, I've supervised counselors for many years. And right now, the counselors that I'm working with, we are spending a lot of time just thinking creatively. And one of the neat things is that we're able to connect so much more, as we're talking about with conferences, mm-hmm. so that we can also just, you know, there's less of a kind of proprietary nature to the thinking. And since we're all new in this, just posting a question to other counselors saying, you know, mm-hmm. how are you dealing with confidentiality online? Or how are you doing team building things for students online? And certainly the counselors that I work with regularly, that's something we've been doing and reaching out to other counselors. And thank goodness, you know, counselors are naturally helpers. Mm-hmm. So we've been sharing a lot of resources and ideas. And I ask my students a lot. I asked, you know, there are a lot of schools where I get to work with kids over and over again, including the school where I'm a counselor. And so I ask them, like, what do you think? One of my questions that I ask kids all the time is, what are the adults not hearing? What do they need mm-hmm. to hear from you? Mm-hmm. So that they can give us ideas. And It was actually one of my students in another school who was suggesting things like, you know, we could do team building things like games and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, we could do that. And so I think reaching out and listening to students on anything is a wise way to spend our time. We'll always learn so much from them. And having them really partner with us to co-construct the environment we're in right now, because it is entirely new for all of us. And the mm-hmm. more we can bring student voice into that, the better off I think we'll all be.
Yeah, that's so great to hear. And I think as we move on from this time in this weird school year that we're currently in, that all schools around the world basically are able to, you know, partner with the students and the parents and stakeholders and just have more of a opportunity for that discussion around inequities, around bias, around racism, mm-hmm. Around just students who, you know, maybe not until recently have felt like their voices can be heard, right? And,
yeah.
You know, I think we've had so often, you know, we kind of work in that space where we're just kind of following the rules laid out by state legislature or the district. But, you know, to be able to evolve, that's one thing I hope comes out of this weird school year is evolve yeah. and become better and, you know, kind of do away with some of the things that we've have occupied our mind in the past.
Absolutely. I'm 100% in agreement with you.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what is one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
I hope listeners will develop some language for themselves around mistake making. And, you know, the fear of making a mistake is one of the biggest barriers to engaging in conversations. And I really feel that not engaging because we're worried about messing up is mm-hmm. an assertion of privilege that a lot of people don't have. And so mm-hmm. the more that we as educators can use the time we are in where our pedagogy has really shifted from we need to be in the front of the room with all the answers yeah. to that we are, you know, doing more project-based work and helping students develop their own learning. And so transferring that teaching style and understanding to our own internal style as we're thinking about our bias and our privileges so we can really begin to deconstruct some of the internal systems that we have that are holding inequity in place mm-hmm. And really build on the idea that, you know, like I said before, admitting that you have bias means that you're admitting you're human. It doesn't mm-hmm. take away from you being a good person at all. And in fact, I'm not the arbiter of good and bad, but I know that I am at my best self when I'm interrogating my bias. And I know that I am not at my best self when I am kind of coasting on that or yeah. ignoring it.
Now, those are such great words to live by. And, you know, really just, yeah, deconstructing those internal systems of inequity, mm-hmm. right? And peeling back the layers, right? And
yes.
really seeing what lies beneath. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
It's I'm everywhere online that I know how to be in a space that I know how to be. So it's just Jen Court and it's C-O-R-T. People often put the U in there, but it's C-O-R-T. My website is just jencourt.com and I'm on you know, social media either under Jen Court or Third Space with Jen Court. And I love, you know, I don't do a lot of email blasting or anything. I tend to just put it out through social media, things that I'm writing. I'll certainly connect with this podcast on my website and things that I'm seeing from other people that are informing my own thinking. I put that out a lot. And so I'd really welcome listeners to join me in those spaces so that I can learn from you and maybe you can learn from me and we can share some ideas and strategies. And so that we are also in partnership, because I really think I just believe firmly that that's how we're all going to grow forward is by being willing to partner with each other.
Great. Well, I've had such a great time having you on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too. It was an absolute pleasure and I really appreciate it. So thank you.